This is the start of the November 7th, 1986 interview with oyster tong maker Albert Corky Richards of Apalachicola, Florida. The interviewer is David Taylor, and this interview was done in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project. Okay, well, the first thing I wanted to ask was, when were you born, Corky?
April 42.
What day was that?
April 30th, 42.
Were you born right here in Appalachia?
Port St. J.
Mm-hmm. How did you happen to come over here?
I was the only child, and me and my folks traveled and lived all over the state of Florida, from Key West to Pensacola, Jacksonville, all in the area up down the East Coast, all along the Florida Keys.
Oh.
And I left, we was living in Miami, in the Kendall area,
mm-hmm.
and moved to Appalachia in 1959. 1959, and I was married, got married not too long after that, and I stayed. My mother and father kept on traveling.
Mm-hmm. What kind of work did your dad do?
He was a barber.
Oh, yeah. Well, what did you think you were going to be doing for work when you were growing up?
I pretty well figured I'd be along in the carpenter line.
Mm-hmm. How did you learn about carpentry?
Really can't say. I just always loved to work with wood, even when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
It grew on me, I guess.
Yeah. When did you start in doing work for other people?
I don't remember the year.
How old
but,
were you?
It was probably 17, 18 years ago. I was an oysterman, commercial fisherman. I done a little bit of all the seine fishing, crabbing, oystering,
mm-hmm.
whatever the bay had to offer. And the oyster bay, the bay would close down 3 months during the summer, and that would leave us without a job. Well, I would just pick up odd jobs, anything, you know, to
mm-hmm.
do. It started off like that. And I more or less hung to the carpenter end of it because I enjoyed that type of work.
How long were you fishing?
From 1960 to roughly probably, I don't know, I fished after I got into this line. I oystered off and on probably around 73.
Mm-hmm. Let's see, you were mentioning yesterday that you built boats or a boat?
Yeah, we built several boats, oyster boats, and small fishing river boats for fishing in the river. Probably about a dozen.
Oh, yeah. Well, how did you learn how to put a boat together?
I don't know. Just put it together.
Yeah.
Anything I'd run up against, I'd ask Bobby Shiver.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd just go look at another one to see how it's constructed, and then just you can come back. If you got wanting something to look at like that, then you can just come back and cut the parts out and put it together. About all it amounts to.
What types of boats would they have been that you made?
Plank boats. I made a few plank boats and plywood boats. They were what we call around here a V-bottom boat,
mm-hmm.
with frames in them. Run anywhere from 14 foot to 28 foot. Kind of small bay boat.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did you get involved making tongs?
When I was oystering, I used to make my own
mm-hmm.
my own handles.
Mm-hmm.
And, one summer, I just happened to get one of our local hardware stores around here that sold tongs. came and asked me if I'd build him some handles that summer for the following season. And that was an order for 24 pair.
Wow.
And which back then during the summer, you know, that was really a break for me to give me work during the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, we had an old timer in East Point that had passed away several years before that, that had a tong handle business set up and had saws and machinery in it, woodworking tools. And I'd been wanting to buy those tools just to have as a, just a more or less a home workshop. And I ended up with them and just kind of flowed into the business.
What was that man's name over at East Point?
Frank Segre.
Oh, yeah.
Was
that a relative of Sonny Boy's?
That was Sonny Boy Segre's father.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now, he was set up just to make tong handles?
Just tong handles.
Hmm.
He was retired at the time, I think, and this was just more or less a... you wouldn't call it a hobby, just, you know, it was something he'd done in his retirement.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
So, but he had built up his shop a little at the time, I imagine, and had quite a number of tools involved. After I bought the tools, I said I would do a little bit of anything. It didn't make any difference. It had to do with wood, and I'd go to it.
Now, before you started making tong handles, in addition to Mr. Segre, were there others who made tong handles around here?
Yes, some of the starting with the old timers, the ones I remember, they were the best and well known was Roy Smith of what was the name of that his shop there?
Marine Works.
Roy V. Smith Marine Works.
Was that in Appalachia?
Yes, that was right down here. The old building they're tearing down now.
That's on the other side of the bridge?
No, on this side of the bridge, by the Mercury.
Oh, yes.
Place.
Right.
It wasn't just this side.
Yeah.
That was Roy Smith's shop there. He passed away a number of years ago. But he was one of the, I guess, about the most well-known tong builders at that time. And then we've had several others around. Frank Segre was in East Point. Then I guess after Frank, I started the business. At the same time, there was a Harrison Jones building handles over there. And then Weefin's Marine Supply here in Appalachia handles tongs, has for years. But they don't build their own. They buy them. Other places. I can't think of anybody else. And yeah. I know there was more here in Appalachia.
Mm-hmm. Did oystermen sometimes make their own, or was it more common for them to buy them from somewhere?
A lot of the oystermen do make their own tongs. I know I did because I was handy with wood whenever I was an oysterman. I would make my own. But most of the oystermen will buy from other places.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I believe there's about, I know there's places in Panacea and Panama City and East Point. There's about three people over there now that's building tongs. And there's three or four here in Appalachia. It's more or less just a sideline with me now. If it wasn't for some of my old customers, I would just get completely out of the business.
Yeah. What's the main part of your business about now?
Just working out in the shop, working on houses, carpenter jobs.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you first started making tongs, what did you have to know to be able to do it?
The big thing, I think what helped me a lot was being an oysterman. And understanding how that tongue was supposed to work, you know, and being able to pick the right board is one of the biggest things. If you've got to have the right grain mm-hmm. in that one particular board.
Is it just one piece of wood that you use for each handle?
Right. Well, you can buy any board that you can see where you can get a handle out of. Maybe some, if you can buy a 12-inch wide board, you might get several handles out of it. But if you buy a narrow board, you might get one. Mm-hmm. As long as your grain is right and you got a good straight board.
Mm-hmm. Do you glue up pieces of wood and laminate them together?
I have laminated a few handles, but not very many. You run into too much expense, too much time.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, I believe just one good piece of lumber is just as good as a laminated.
What kind of wood do you use for the handles?
Yellow pine, mostly.
Yeah. There's someone down
here. It's repair work right now.
Okay, mm-hmm. Let me just shut this off while you talk. Okay. We were just talking about your yellow pine. Where do you get that?
Anywhere we can find it.
Yeah.
It's hard to come by now. I go Panama, Perry. If I'm going out of town, going toward Perry, I can look around over there. And if I happen to go to Panama to pick up something, I just keep my eyes open for mm-hmm. it everywhere I go. Mm-hmm.
You know, how long does it have to be for it to be useful to you?
10 foot up.
Mm-hmm.
10, whatever you can get.
Mm-hmm.
If you can find me 20 foot long, it'd be good.
You were saying before that since you're an oysterman, it helped you know how to make the tongs. What was it that was helpful to know exactly, to know how to shape them or length them?
No, the shaping and anyone that's a... at a pair of tong handles and then cut out another pair identical to them and shape them. And anybody familiar with wood could do the same thing. It's just, you know, it's no big secret to it. It's just knowing what you're looking at and what you're trying to pick out. Because I could take 5 minutes, I could show you how to build a pair of handles.
Mm-hmm.
Shortcuts on cutting them out. There's quite a few things I've figured out, you know, how to speed the process up. Is that falling? Yeah, it gets better.
Yeah,
hang it up. But, you know, that's no big deal. The biggest thing in a pair of oyster tongs is having them set right.
Mm-hmm.
If their heads are not set on the handles just right, your rivet lengths and all, it's got a lot to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But the angle of the teeth is on the heads, what we call the heads, that's the tongs themselves. It has got to be right. You got to have a tooth about 2 inches long, shorter. You get a real long tooth, it just don't do the job. And it's a lot to do with what kind of bottom you're oystering on. If you're on a soft bottom, you want a different set. And if you're on a hard bottom, you got to have a lesser set.
How are they different?
So, the angle is a pair of tongs operates like a pair of pliers.
Mm-hmm.
But on the end of the pliers, your teeth would be set at different angles. I don't know how to explain it. It's like that would be a lot of set if you're looking down. Well, that way would dig. If you
mm-hmm.
bend your teeth more up this way, see that's your set in your tongs with it. I'm show it to you on a pair
okay.
of tongs in a minute.
Okay.
But knowing that and getting picking out a good board with some good grain, that's you got to have a pretty stiff handle.
Mm-hmm.
If it's too limber, they won't work.
Mm-hmm. when an oysterman comes to you and he wants a new set of tongs, does he just say, make me a set of tongs, or does he have to tell you certain things to, so you'll know?
It depends. Some oystermen that I've done business with over the years, I knew what they're looking for, and they don't say too much because I know what they want. If someone comes along I hadn't done any business with, then I have to ask them what they want, you know, what particulars. Well, some of them will come and they'll want their handles dressed down a little smaller, or they'll want to, yeah, be different little things that suits the each oysterman.
What other things besides the diameter of the handle might they specify?
The height of rivets, the rivet length from the end of your, from the teeth on the heads to the rivet is an important part. Some oystermen want that changed, just an inch or two will make a big difference. That's about the biggest thing, you know, an oysterman be concerned with.
Does the height or the size of the oysterman make any difference in terms of where that pivot point would be, or
The length of the handles, the depth of the water you're working in determines your rivet height. If you're working in deeper water, you want a higher rivet height because you're working on the top end of a longer handle, then your heads don't open up as far if your rivet's short. When you raise that rivet up, your pivot point, then your head's open further and you can cover more bottom. If you're in real shallow water and you've got high rivets, you know, it's a long way to your pivot point, then you're really working a lot harder because you don't have as much leverage. So you want your rivet point lower then.
Yep. We can pause if you got to talk to
him. All right.
Chop yourself, mate.
You're everything to everybody here.
Yours? Out of my truck? You can have them. You can have the whole battery. Charge it up, it'll last a little bit.
Let's see now, I'm trying to remember what we were talking about there.
The rivet heights and things.
That's it,
yeah.
That's it. Do you make the heads yourself?
Yep.
How do you go about that?
We start off with on a forge and an anvil, making the teeth. Like I said, the teeth are about 2 inches long. They're made out of a quarter inch round rod, and we beat them to a point, heat them up, beat them to a point, and then cut them to length and drop them in some water, and that hardens them, makes a good hard tooth that don't bend. And then we just cut the rest of our metal out. There's mostly mild steel and cold roll mixed, and we have jigs and templates set up that we just put our parts in and start welding.
Where'd you get the jigs and templates?
I made them over a period of years. I would started off the hard way with simple setups, and then as I went along, I would figure out a better way, and, make different templates and all for bending the metal and holding things. That's one thing or another.
Besides the teeth, do the other parts of the head have names?
On the heads, we've got what we call the hoops, the centerpiece, or gooseneck. There's several different names. I don't guess there's one any specific name for it.
That's the piece that attaches to the handle?
Attaches to the handle, right. And then the brails are the little wires that run across like that makes the basket to hold the oysters in. Then you've got your teeth, you've got your tooth bar. The teeth are welded to, and your end pieces, what the brails are welded to on the end of the tongs, and that about covers that. Then on your handles, you have the handles, other parts of the country they're called shabs, we call them handles here in Appalachia. Shavs and handles is about the only names I've heard for the wood part. Mm-hmm. And then your rivet and your in your handles, that about covers that. Mm-hmm.
Well, you get ready to make a set of tongs, what do you do first?
Well, the first thing, you locate your lumber,
yeah,
which is the biggest job, finding a good board to start a handle with. And we set up a saw and get our templates out to saw the handle out. You get it to the right shape, then you run the handle through the shaper, which puts the rounded edge on your handles, and then you set your rivets in. And that about covers the handles.
Mm-hmm.
On your tongs, the first thing you do is build the teeth and cut your metal out and go to your welder. That's a pretty lengthy process to build just one set of tongs. I suppose maybe if a man got on it, he might be able to build two complete sets in a day. I've never timed it because I've never had the call to have two sets a day. I'll get out there maybe one evening or something and beat a bunch of teeth out. And I'll just put them up, and then another day I might cut some more parts out. And just have the parts always cut out on my own hand. And if you work it a little bit like that, and have everything cut out and ready to go, especially your teeth made, then if somebody wants a pair of tongs, then you can have everything ready to assemble. It's not so bad.
Mm-hmm. Do the width of the heads vary at all?
They vary quite a bit, yes. We've got what we call 8-tooth tongs. We go by the number of the teeth.
Mm-hmm.
The teeth are approximately 2 inches apart. The most common right now would be what they call a 16-tooth tong, and the length of the tongue itself would be 33 inches. Because you've got to eat from the low hanging chin.
Oh!
I'll unplug that right here.
What is that?
Air compressor. But they'll run anywhere from 17 inches up to, I have made them as long as 5 foot, but that's a mighty big head.
Hmm.
33, 36 inches is common.
Why would someone want a shorter or longer head?
Depending on each individual oysterman and what area they're working in. If they're in real thick, heavy stuff, they would want a smaller head so they could break through the hard bottom and all.
Mm-hmm. Is the spacing between the teeth always 2 inches?
Around in this area, I have seen them, spaced different, but here in this area of Florida, 2 inches is not the most common.
Mm-hmm. Are there the same number of teeth on each side of the head?
Right.
And you were showing me before that they sort of interlock,
yeah,
like the fingers on
right,
the
hands? Right, that's right. And the angle, that's where your set comes in at. It's the angle of that tooth after it's the set of heads put together determines on how that set of tongs a fish.
Mm-hmm.
The old timers, it's around the older oysterman that was really, the younger oysterman too, could tell a pair of tongs, one pair of tongs are different from the other. By the feel and the sound of them. A good oysterman can tell when he's tonguing whether he's in oysters or shell. And he can tell, if he's in real good oysters, he can tell by the feel and by the sound of that set of tongs. And used to, when I was an oysterman, we'd call them, if a pair of tongs you couldn't feel with them, or couldn't hear them, we'd call them dead, just a dead pair of tongs.
Mm-hmm.
You'd pass them around from oysterman to oysterman to check them out.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody could catch oysters with them when they wasn't any good.
Hmm.
That can come in, your handles be too limber, cause it. You can have not have the right type of metal in your heads except to cause that ring and that feel. And if you get old soft metal, you can't hear nothing, you know. Mm-hmm. But you got a sound whenever you're tonguing on the bottom of that raking over the shell and oysters. You can tell.
Hmm.
You got what they call cull pounds, you know, when you cull off.
Mm-hmm.
If a boat's just sitting still and he culls off, he'll create a cull pound. When you hit a cull pound with a good pair of tongs, you can tell it the second you get your tongs on it. You're just going to bypass that.
Hmm.
It fit real thick, you
yeah.
know. But you know what it is, and you know it's just shell.
Hmm.
And you get off and you get a different feel, and sometimes you used to. I don't think it's like that anymore, but used to when I was oystering, every now and then you could hit some real thick oysters, you know, just solid oysters. And boy, when you felt your tongues get in them oysters like that, boy, you'd get on it then.
Yeah, that's
really go to work.
It's like listening to the sound of an instrument or something.
That's
like
right.
Playing a violin or something mm-hmm. like that.
It's an art, really an art to tongue in oysters. I know we had here several years ago, we had a real good crop of oysters for several years running. And we had people come in that had never oystered before. You know, they come in and, I want to buy a pair of oyster tongs. You ask them, well, what size you want? And they said, well, I don't know. And I had one fella come in, and he asked me about a pair of tongs. I said, sure, and I walked over where the tongs were, and he said, oh, is that tongs? I said, I've never seen a pair, but I'm going oystering. But they didn't last too long. They'd take them out, they'd break the handles, and they just didn't know how. I mean, that actually happened.
Hmm.
I thought I'd never seen a pair of tongs going oystering.
Wow. How long do a pair generally last? Professional?
A good pair of heads would probably last 4 or 5 years. It varies. Sometimes they won't last a year, depending on who's oystering with them and how well they take care of them. A pair of handles can last a day up to a couple of 2 or 3 years, depending on the piece of wood that's in that set of handles. And they're again depending on who's tonguing with them. If somebody's real rough on them, they won't last long. If you got a good oysterman, he's got a good pair of handles, he'll take real good care of his tongs, because he's just one tool of the trade that he has to really take care of.
How do you take care of them? Is there anything you do to make them last longer?
Well, no, the wear and tear on from the tongue is about the worst on a pair of tongs. If you're not using them, if you just throw them down, lean them beside the house, or put them under a tree or something like that, that's not too good on them. Leave them out in the sun, they'll dry out. You know, wood will crack up, or put them under a house and the termites eat them, or something like that. Most times, if you got a car shed or a shed or something, you put them in the rafters or hang them up where the handles are laying straight and
mm-hmm.
keep them out of the weather.
Mm-hmm. Excuse That's me right. just a minute. Let me flip this over. Do fishermen ever put anything, any kind of preservative in the shafts?
A few will use some linseed oil and stuff like that to treat the wood. But no, commonly you just take raw wood. Treating the wood like that is not really much you can do.
Mm-hmm. Do oystermen only have one pair of tongs
usually? I say usually. I don't know. Some oysterman has 2 or 3 pairs. Used to when I was oystering, we'd like to have at least 2 pair, a pair for shallow water and a pair for deep water.
Mm-hmm.
That's the biggest thing. Biggest variance if you happen to be working in shallow water one day and then you want to go to deep water, you got to have a pair of tongs to fish either one.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to...
What lengths are generally considered deep water?
Okay, well, now, the common length now is about 14 foot would be the most common. When I was oystering, 12-foot was the common. You use 10-foot and 12-foot handles now. You use 14s, 16-foot, and some oystermen even want longer handles than that. You have to go to the deeper water now to find oysters. Mm-hmm.
What prices do you charge for a set of tongs?
Well, it varies depending on the length of the handles and the heads. Round off price, average price will probably run $110.
Mm-hmm.
That's for a complete set. And I would say, well, probably the average price now, the tax and everything, would be about
$115. Mm-hmm. Are all the tongs custom made for a particular fisherman, or do you have some in stock someone could just pick one up?
No, generally I try to have a few in stock. If I here the last two or three years, it's no big deal. I'm liable to be out of wood or something or out of metal for maybe a month or so, and then if I get some in, and then all the oystermen, they'll check with me. When I get materials in, they'll
mm-hmm.
come in and get them in. But years ago, whenever, I guess it's been 7 or 8 years ago now, we used to build quite a few tongs, and we would keep handles and heads built up at all times.
Mm-hmm.
And back whenever we was having real good seasons. Like, it's just, right now, it's about a thing of the past for me.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't, like I say, if it wasn't for my old customers, I'd just discontinue the business. But I've been in it so long,
right.
I just hate to get out
sure.
of it. Cause
well, let's say you do get out of it. Where would oystermen around here go for these?
Oh, there's places here in Appalachia, Weefin's Supply, and then, like I say, there's several people up in East Point
mm-hmm.
Still build tongs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in the service. And,
what makes your tongs different from other people's?
I don't know. It's just a little different type of head. I really try to build a good quality product because I guarantee them. If anything goes wrong, my guarantee is if you're not satisfied, bring them back.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're not satisfied with them and they bring them back, well, I try to find out, well, what's the problem, you know. If it's like we said, if a dead pair of tongs, well, then you just replace the whole 9 yards.
Mm-hmm.
If maybe one handle's warped or both of them warped or they're limber or something, that's I guess that's the way I've kept what little business I've got.
Mm-hmm. How do the shapes of your heads differ from those that other people make?
Mostly in the size of the metal and the type of metal you use is about the longest difference. The amount of the rails, the length of the heads, and the spacing of the teeth, the length of the teeth are all just not the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the size of the handles, depending on the shaper head you use, is what determines the size of your handles. And I build my own heads for my shaper to get the shape that I want.
Because mm-hmm.
I can remember when I was oystering, I could remember how I wanted mine shaped, so I wouldn't have a big ball of wood in my hand trying
mm-hmm.
to work. You want to keep it small enough you can grip
mm-hmm.
and yet leave enough wood on to for your handle to be still.
Do oystermen, after they get the tongs through, do they shape them again ever? Cut them down or thin them down?
You can take a pair of, say a pair of 16-foot handles, would be a lot wider at the rivet point.
Mm-hmm.
And if they want to cut them down and make 12-foot handles out of them, then naturally you don't need all that wood, because you don't need as you wouldn't need as much wood on a shorter pair of handles. Then you shape them, you take them on down some.
Oh yeah.
But the longer that handle, the bigger around they've got to be.
What tools do you need to make tongs?
Well, actually, you could build a pair of tongs with a hatchet.
Yeah.
What I have now. As a what involves, let's say, a table saw, a shaper, routers. One router. I use a drill press and several different drills. I have the tools. I've collected them over a period of years. And I happen to have them. I've got everything set up. Where if you have to be able to put a set of handles together, it don't take very long to do it if all your machinery is set up for building handles. When I first started off, first pair I ever built, I had a skill saw and a little hand plane, and I borrowed a hand drill to drill the hose, and that was it. So, and you can take a, I have taken a broken glass and smoothed the handles out where, you know, get rough or something, you just take a piece of broken glass and scrape down the side of a handle and smooth it out just as smooth as silk. So, it depends on who's building them and, and how, and what tools involved.
What do you have in the way of the forge?
Little Mickey Mouse outfit.
My son out there.
Outside, it's, I got an old vacuum cleaner motor hooked up, blowing into the bottom of an old Freon bottle I've cut in half. And I've just got it sitting on a little stand. And we used to use charcoal quite a bit, but here lately I've found a little bit of coal around Appalachia, and I use the old coal that's left in Appalachia. It does a real good job.
Now, you use the forge for what again? For what parts of the
Just head? For the tooth, to beat the beat the tooth out to a point. It's the only thing I use the forge on.
Oh, yeah. And you have a welder for the other parts?
We weld, electric weld everything else together.
How has the way that you have made the tongs changed much over the years?
No. I've added a few more tools. And like I say, the biggest thing is different templates, and different setups, jigs.
Okay.
Basically, that's the same thing.
Okay. Well, I think I'm out of questions. Is there anything I've forgotten to ask you that's important for me to know about tongs and how they're shaped to me?
No.
This off. Now, can you show me your...
This is the end of the November 7th, 1986 interview with oyster tong maker Albert Corky Richards of Apalachicola, Florida. The interview was conducted in Richards' cabinet shop on Water Street in Apalachicola by David Taylor. This interview was done in connection with the Maritime Heritage Survey Project. End of tape.